Checkerfin. Checkerfin.
Boredom is always in my head.
Checkerfin. Checkerfin.
Yes.
It's the education gadfly.
Sex, sex.
Mike and Rick tell you
early college, high school, pain and suffering,
learning and teaching.
In your face, in your face,
your
face.
Listen to your words that they be preaching. Cause here's the education gadfly show. Yeah.
Hello, this is your host, Mike Petrilli at the Thomas B. Fordham Institute, here with my co-host, a high-achieving policy wonk, Rick Hess.
Hey, Mike, how you doing, baby?
I'm well. How are you?
I'm good. I'm a little sad.
Why are you sad?
Today's a special show, a sad show, I hear.
It is. It's a going-away show.
I hate
for our
away.
Beloved Jeff Kooner.
I'm not good with goodbyes. They make me a little sentimental and weepy.
But Jeff's not going far. He's going to still be here in town. He's going to have his big radio show, and I understand he's going to have us on it every week.
Yeah, but he's going to start hanging out with like crazy right-wingers, and he's not going to be the same gentle soul that we've long known.
Well, if you saw his editorial in the Washington Times this past week, you'll know he's already not such a gentle soul.
What did he say?
Well, I think it would be fair to characterize his piece as gay bashing. He compared gay people to Nazis, basically.
What grounds exactly?
Oh, you know, get more readers for the right-wing Washington
but what was,
Times.
How do
this
you...
was in the context of gay marriage. And I mean, there's a lot of fine arguments against gay marriage. I understand that, though. I personally think I've come to believe that I'm fine with the gay marriage thing. But I understand, you know, people having problems with that. But you can have problems with gay marriage without actually having problems with gay people.
And, that kind of cheapens the Nazi analogy. When you roll the Nazi analogy out for gay marriage, that seems a little disproportionate.
The big guns. Well, we'll have to let Jeff respond later when he's on the show. Rick, around here has been high-achieving students all the time. We had our big event yesterday on this, which was really exciting. Great turnout and a very interesting panel. And Tom Lovelace, Steve Farkas presented their findings and interesting responses from Josh Weiner at the Jack Kent Cook Foundation and Ross Wiener.
What did Ross have to say?
Well, Ross, of course, was defending No Child Left Behind and concerned about whether or not we were creating a false choice between focusing on low achievers and high achievers. You know, his belief that we could focus on everybody. And I certainly agree that we can make policy changes that create incentives to focus on everybody. But the big question was, when you're talking about in a classroom, if you're looking out as a teacher to kids all over the map, can you actually reach all kids where they are, or do you have to make choices? And right now, it looks like teachers are choosing to focus on their low-achieving kids.
Well, what about differentiated instruction? Isn't that the all-purpose solution here?
Well, that came up, in fact, Rick, and that seemed to be Ross's main point, was that that's exactly what we need to do, is teach teachers how to differentiate their instruction. We've got a pretty good debate going. Tom Lovelace of Brookings saying, look, Ross, there's no evidence that differentiated instruction works. And in fact, the strong evidence is that we'd be better off grouping kids by ability, the red birds and the blue birds. And then we got a little bit of debate going around that.
Was there...
Christina looks puzzled. What do you mean?
Were you a red bird or a blue bird? You've been using this analogy
the
for
red
weeks.
Bird,
I'm dying
birds?
To know.
I don't
what
remember.
Were you?
I don't remember.
Okay.
I mean, I don't want to brag. I mean, I think I was in, one of the higher reading groups, but I don't remember if that was bluebirds or redbirds.
That's pretty weak ass grouping. Two groups. Right? I mean, usually there's like a half dozen groups.
What are there? Yellowbirds and greenbirds. Well, what else?
You can birds. or a more imaginative teacher might have gone hummingbirds and mockingbirds.
Oh, you're gonna put some kid in the mockingbird group?
And I'm gonna call them the mockers.
Rick, I'm glad I wasn't in your class.
Yeah, baby.
All right. Well, a lot to cover today, and of course, including Jeff Kooner's last education outrage of the week. But before that, we will play Pardon the Gadfly. We'll hear some education news of the weird. Let's get started.
Topic one. Governor Deval Patrick wants a statewide teachers union contract for Massachusetts. It's an intriguing idea. Is it smart?
Rick, I'm really torn about this one. I feel like in theory, perhaps a statewide teachers union contract wouldn't be the worst thing. Here's why. First of all, we suspect that union contracts in more affluent districts probably aren't so bad. At least in the study that you and Kobe did, among the bigger districts in the country, it looked like the Fairfax counties and some of these other more affluent districts had contracts that were reasonably flexible. And so it could be that affluent parents are not going to stand for having their schools have to operate under a restrictive contract. And so they would exert some pressure to make sure that a statewide contract was good. That would be very good for the urban districts and others that today have very bad contracts.
Yeah, I mean, I think you can spin scenarios where this does or doesn't make sense, depending how you think about it. Generally, one of the arguments for No Child Left Behind was that unions are strongest at the local level, weakest, relatively speaking, at the national level. And so part of the argument by a variety of groups that backed NCLB was that it was a chance to legislate in a way that would bypass some of the union's greatest strengths. But by that argument, going to the state level from the districts actually plays where the unions are in a more contested playing field and mm-hmm. don't have such a monopoly. On the other hand, if there's anybody who's in a position to marshal their resources, organize, and really bring power to bear, it's going to be the unions. And if they knew that the contract action was at the state level, it's not hard to imagine that they would get more organized and more focused real quickly in state legislative races.
Now, if there's a statewide contract, does that imply then a statewide salary schedule? And that could be, you could argue, good for equity in terms of, you know, the affluent districts would no longer be able to, outcompete the other districts in terms of higher teacher salaries.
Yeah, I mean, but then you get into stuff like cost of living adjustments. I mean, New York City versus upstate New York. How do you, another piece of this too, an interesting thing, is that if you go statewide, it does create opportunities for districts and for reformers to figure out where the weak spots are in the contract and the gray spots and to push aggressively across the board. And then to do this rather than having to do it case by case wherever you can find local backing.
I think it's fair to say that we just don't know how to come down on this one.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Okay, try this one. A Texas commission is likely going to change eligibility requirements for people participating in alternative routes to teacher certification. Now they will be required to have a 2.5 GPA before being admitted to programs. Is this a positive sign of raising standards or a bureaucratic impediment for people who may have gone to college many years before?
Well, I'm not sure why the college many years before matters. I don't know that people routinely had sub 2.5s 20 years ago, but I mean, most grade inflation happened in the kind
right,
of
right.
65.
But the question is, is that really a good, the best indicator? Just like looking at SAT scores from 20 years ago, maybe there's some more relevant data that you want to look at.
That's right. So, I'm actually mixed on this one. On the one hand, the last thing you want is alternative credentialing to be a path for warm bodies to kind of sneak into the systems. On the other hand, even though a 2.5 threshold seems perfectly reasonable on its face, you do worry about the temptations to creeping regulation and creeping bureaucracy. And you start with this, and then people can start to come up with a whole bunch more perfectly reasonable seeming ideas until you've cluttered up alternative certification just the way we have traditional routes.
Well, I actually think this is a very good thing. And that's because, what we want to see in alternate routes are very high standards for the people coming in. And then, as you imply, very low regulations around other kinds of process issues. What we see in most alternate route programs is the exact opposite. They let almost anybody in, and they still have to go through lots of the hoops and hurdles that traditionally certified teachers have to go through. So I think this is a move in the right direction. I don't think it's necessarily a slippery slope. I would say, though, maybe an either or. Either you have to have had a 2.5 GPA, or you have to pass a challenging test that shows that you're smart and that you know something. But I would allow at least that alternative, in case somebody maybe didn't do well in college 20 years ago, but is doing much better now.
Mm-hmm.
Last one. Increasingly, middle schools are making a big deal out of eighth grade graduations. Barack Obama says, quote, "Hold on a second. Let's not have a huge party. You're supposed to graduate from eighth grade," unquote. Was this his sister Solja moment? More importantly, is he right?
Mike, I actually like the sentiment here. I mean, I like the notion that he's saying, look, the goal is not to get out of eighth grade. The goal is to get a lot farther than that.
Right.
On the other hand, I'm in favor of kids having parties. If schools want to have Triscuits and Kool-Aid and they want to have the kids, get a little rowdy and run around and, goof off.
Mm-hmm.
I'm good with that, but I like the sentiment that he's putting out there.
Yeah, I mean, look, I think he's exactly right that this is, why are we having a big party for eighth grade? I have also even wondered, I remember back in high school thinking, why are we making that big a deal about high school graduation? I mean, come on, it doesn't take a whole lot to graduate from high school in this day and age in America. Maybe it never did, but now college graduation, that takes, that takes something.
Although the one thing I'm worried about, I'm curious about, is where this reference to big parties, a huge party. I mean, it strikes me that if schools are having eighth grade parties, right, I'm in favor of this, right? The kids have been in middle school or junior high for a couple years, typically. you know, 2-3 years. It's fun to do something with your friends.
Sure, sure, sure. A party. But, I mean, they are going over the top. I mean, we're talking about full-on graduation ceremonies with cap and gown. We're talking about, you know, prom-like dances. We're talking about tuxedos and limousines.
Oh, whoa, no, scratch. Okay, I retract. Then I'm an Obamacon right here, baby. So, let's put an end to this nonsense. We've got people who can't pay their mortgages. Uh-huh. Tax dollars have got to bail out families uh-huh. who can't afford the places they uh-huh. live. They're throwing money like crazy. Uh-huh. They're complaining about gas uh-huh. prices, and they want to go rent a bunch of 14-year-olds tuxedos. This is nonsense.
And another thing, Rick, I mean, what's with the kindergarten graduation? I mean, this is out of hand. You got little 5-year-olds walking down in little caps and gowns.
Yeah, yeah, no caps. If they want to make paper caps and gowns as a class project, and the parents want to show up,
I thought we were against that kind of make-work.
No, it's not make-work. Paper mache, kindergartners, for God's sake.
They should be learning how to read and do math.
For 5-year-olds, a little bit of paper mache is not such a bad thing.
Yeah, but this all from the guy who in 4.5 years might be hosting the kindergarten graduation, right, Mike?
Well, that is true. I probably would feel differently once Nico. I don't know. I think Nico might graduate from kindergarten by the time he's 4. Whoa. I'm just saying, at the rate he's at, he's a brilliant kid. But you all don't want to hear about that.
Especially when he's throwing up on himself. The way he, like, tries to throw up in convenient locations. Yes. Genius. Yes. Sheer genius, baby.
Well, that was really not his fault. That was his daddy's fault for stuffing him so full of food.
So it's not the genes so much. But it's,
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. All right. Well, here we are, Rick. It is... It's that sad time, but it's also a meaningful time for all of us. Jeff Kuhner with his very last Education Outrage of the Week.
Mike, to all good things must come an end. And this is the end, Mike. It's my final education outrage. You know, Mike, I've covered a lot of stories. Bus drivers in toilets while their bus is going down a hill with, you know, packed with kids.
Yeah, yeah.
The teachers threatening to, you know, murder students in the classroom. I mean, we've covered it all.
And but thanks to your sources.
Based on my well-connected sources. But this, to me, is going to be the mother of all outrages. And, you know, Mike, and it's not a news story. It's happening right here at Fordham. And here is the outrage.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
To my understanding, Fordham was a serious, substantive, credible education policy think tank. And then, lo and behold, you put this loudmouth, obnoxious windbag to do an education outrage.
Little Limbaugh.
A little Limbaugh every week. Mm-hmm. And the credibility of this institution has gone right down the tubes. And so I have to ask myself, as I give my final pink slips, who is to blame here? Number one, I blame Kobe Loop for producing the show. Our esteemed producer who does crossword puzzles as we're all doing our stint. That's how committed he is to the show. I have Christina Henches, who's participated in this show. She should be fired. Liam Julian, who did News of the Weird, following me. What kind of credibility is this guy, an education policy analyst? If he had any integrity, he would have walked out. He would have said, I don't want to do a show with Jeff Kuhner. He should be fired. There's Rick Hess. He leads the most influential think tank's Education Policy Center. This is supposed to be a respected man. And he sits beside me week after week listening to my nonsense, my bullshit, week after week. If he had any honor and integrity, he would have resigned. The first thing I'm doing, Mike, when I leave this job on Monday is I'm calling up the president of AEI and I'm going to send him podcast clips of me on. And I'm going to say, do you think Rick Hess should have been on the air with me? And then, Mike, all roads lead to you. You are the vice president. You are the one that authorized this. The buck stops with you. Mike, you should be fired, my friend. And then finally, Checker, who's the president of this institution. I mean, where is he? I mean, where is the captain of the ship?
He doesn't know how to listen to podcasts.
Well, he's in Burma. Or he's in who knows what trip. He should be fired. So in the end, what do we have left? We have Amber Winkler and Marvin Harden. We're down to two people. So
there's Eric.
And there's Eric, yeah, obviously. But then again, our whole Ohio team. Sorry, I forgot about those guys. But there's a lot of openings right now at Fordham. My advice to people is get your applications in there. And on a serious note, though, Mike, really, look, I really want to thank you guys, really, honestly, for the wonderful opportunity. In all seriousness, you guys are a class act, first-rate think tank. Honestly, I think the work that you guys do is superb. You guys, to me, are true American patriots. Honestly, God bless you, Mike. God bless everybody. And Mike, honestly, I'll have you on the show every week. So this is not goodbye, but just a new beginning.
Oh, Cooner.
Cooner.
Bring
Jeff.
It.
Cooner. Woo-hoo! Jeff Cooner.
Bringing the thunder night after night.
Education outrage of the week. Wow. Jeff, we will miss you.
You know, there's nothing's quite as much fun as seeing you called a great American patriot by a Canadian expat.
But come on, immigrants have always been, I feel like, some of our strongest patriots.
Are we confident that Cooner is not a sleeper agent? I mean,
no, we're not.
Does he maybe think that Fordham is weakening America to enable a great Canadian invasion from the north?
I think that's very possible. Now they're going to give him a nationally syndicated talk radio show. You can imagine the damage. Wow. Well, I'm a little choked up, but the show must go on, Rick. The show must go on. So it is that time, the time we wait for all week long. Education news of the weird time. With our special correspondent, Amy, this week. Amy, our intern from Virginia Tech. Amy, what is weird this week?
Well, 3 17-year-old students were arrested and threatened with assault charges last week in Brooklyn after giving some of their teachers and administrators laxative-laced cake. An idea that, according to a commenter on the website for the New York Daily News, was taken from MTV's High School Stories TV show.
This is why High School Musical is a better influence on American youth.
Mm-hmm.
The little red laxatives were masquerading as cherries in the chocolate ice bundt cake. The seniors at the Brooklyn School for Global Studies have been suspended and banned from graduation. Teachers and administrators are surprised by the actions of the three students, one of whom is a cheerleader and straight-A student. There was a rumor among students that the cake had been sprayed with Raid when one of the teacher's symptoms looked like insecticide poisoning. He claimed his lips and tongue went numb after tasting the bitter laxatives. But the health department debunked that myth after testing the cake. There were mixed reactions among the students at the school. Some laughed at the prank, while others expressed disappointment at their classmates' behavior. One school official had this to say: "It's very hard when you give so much of your heart and soul to your kids and someone hurts you like that." And that's education news of the weird.
Well, first of all, Amy, very nicely done, filling in for Liam. So, Rick, you know, we had a story a few months ago about students that brought in marijuana-laced brownies and gave them to a teacher. So what do you think? How do we decide? Which is worse, the laxative, the marijuana? What do you think?
You know, on the one hand, I'm appalled by this.
Right? And it's,
I mean, my God, they looked like cherries? Come on now.
Well, that's what's funny. I mean, they were there. I mean, they were out in plain view.
Do these teachers not eat cake routinely? I mean, they can't tell when cherries look more like laxatives embedded in a cake. You know what this reminds me of? It reminds me of that scene in American Pie when Finch has been hit with the laxative lace coffee by William Sean Scott.
Mm.
And boom, it's a whole. Remember, it ruined him. He'd spent half the movie investing in his reputation.
Yeah.
And in one painful and relatively gross episode, all unwound.
Wow. Wow. But you didn't answer my question.
Oh.
How do you, you know, the marijuana-laced brownie. Did we ever talk about that on the show?
I think you might have emailed with our friend Lauren Barron, teacher down in North Carolina, on it.
Mm-hmm.
It depends. How politically incorrect is one allowed to be in this day and age, right? You know, quite frankly, it strikes me that the vast majority of teachers who I like being around would actually not frown upon a marijuana-laced brownie, but would be less than enthused about a laxative lace cake. But
that's exactly what I suspected you might say.
The other hand, do you know?
Well, you know, we probably shouldn't, have too much fun with this because, you know, the poor teachers, I mean, I'm sure that for a day or two, that was probably very uncomfortable for them having eaten that cake. Okay, well, that is all the time we have. We are taking next week off for the 4th of July.
Yeah, baby.
But we will be back after that. Of course, we will be Jeff Coonerless.
Oh.
But we will be working on a new segment because Jeff, in the end, everybody has to be replaceable.
Oh.
All right. Well, we will miss you, Jeff. Until next time,
Hey, bye, Jeff, babe. We're going to miss you. Till next time, I'm Rick Hess.
And Jeff, we really are going to miss you. I'm Mike Petrilli of the Thomas B. Fordham Institute, signing off.